It's got a death curse.
Don't all of you be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Says horror is just an adult's game. Who doesn't remember the tales of the boogeyman waiting for them in their closets or under their beds? No, no, no! Fear is for everyone of all ages. And in that spirit, we here at Horror 101 have cooked up this very special show to focus on the dark and macabre moments in Disney and other family-friendly movies that thrilled us growing up. It's a time capsule show that's good for all ages. For the first time ever, we are inviting our listeners' kids to the show for a special PG-rated podcast that will help educate everyone's fears. And our first order of business was to cut out the usual swearing involved, which, as we found out early in the recording, was not going to be easy.
So, Brian Stewart, you're finally getting your family show. How long have you been cooking this idea?
Oops!
Where's the shots?
Joining me in this macabre family show is the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, and the lovely nude might make an appearance a little later.
I saw the boogeyman. I saw him outside.
What do you look like?
The boogeyman.
It's our first family-friendly show. This will be the first show that I do not tag as explicit. Every other show has cussing, vulgarity. It's a show explicitly for adults.
Well, because I'm sure there's quite a few horror fans out there that are also, you know, have kids, right? So how do you bring them into that part of your life? How do you introduce them to those movies that you love? At what age is it appropriate? How do you show them horror films? How do you introduce them? In our day, it was just, you know, television was our babysitter in a lot of ways. Parents would be busy in another room. They'd rent us a movie, or they'd let us go to the video store, and they were a lot less strict about what they would rent out to kids in those days.
But even still, there's a lot of movies in the family section that have some effective nightmare fuel.
A lot of people don't realize, and you'll never see these movies again probably, they're going to be sealed in a Disney vault somewhere, but there was a time when Disney was intent on making scary live-action movies for kids.
Yeah.
Just absolutely terrifying movies. They made Watcher in the Woods. They met with Betty Davis.
1980.
Yeah. They did Dragon Slayer in 81. They did Something Wicked. They also did Return to Witch Mountain, which I think was supposed to be like a...
Yeah, but the Witch Mountain movies were... I did watch those when I was a kid. Yeah. Those were more goofy.
Scary. Yeah. But they also, in their realm of animation, they'd also done the Black Cauldron.
Black Cauldron, yeah.
Dark Crystal was Jim Henson, which is also part of Disney as well. But
and even Sleeping Beauty had some creepy-ass moments in it.
We're going to let the A-word slide.
Well, what was the most... I mean, the first frightening thing you ever saw in a film?
Wizard of Oz. I think the Wizard of Oz had some imagery in there that kind of screwed me up. The flying monkeys, the witch was horribly nasty.
You see that? That's how much longer you've got to be alive. And it isn't long, my pretty. It isn't long. I can't wait forever to get those shoes.
Remember, the most terrifying part of that movie was the hourglass when Dorothy was trapped in the castle and she turns it over and says, "You have this long to live."
And it was a huge hourglass, but it just seemed, yeah, it didn't seem like a lot of time when she said that. No. And turned it upside down.
For children to be shown an image of an inevitable death, most kids don't think about death at that age. They think that, you know, you're going to live for 100, 150 years, that they don't even know what old is. But to be shown all of your life in one hourglass just sifting away, saying, when this is done, you're dead. That may have been one of the first times a child actually has to face the idea of death in a family film. It may just have been Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz has been around since 1939. It's been on television sets for over half a century. It's still regarded as one of the most watched family films ever created, but it has elements that are extremely dark. The witch and her flying monkeys, the castle guards with their ominous chanting, the apple trees that come alive and start chastising them for picking fruit off the limbs in the haunted forest. The yellow brick road certainly takes some macabre twists and turns on the way to the Emerald City.
Let's go to the Black Hole. What do you remember from the Black Hole? That was a Disney movie.
Yeah.
I remember, well, the one thing I'll always remember, of course, is the bridge sequence in front of the meteorite that comes crashing through.
Tonight, my friends, we stand on the brink of a feat unparalleled in space exploration. If the data on my returning probe ship matches my computerized calculations, I will travel where no man has dared to go.
Into the black hole?
In, through, and beyond.
Dr. Heinz Reinhardt.
Hans Reinhardt.
It's like, yeah, so nobody was holding a grudge about the whole World War II thing. What are you going to do? Make him a space Nazi. Everybody will hate him.
Fresh off the heels of Star Wars, Disney decided to throw a ton of money into its own space adventure called The Black Hole. It had cutesy robots and evil robots and laser blast fights, everything a children's movie should have. But how about this? Dr. Reinhardt has turned all his crew into mindless zombies, gearing up his stolen ship for some suicide mission. And as the story unfolds and his secrets are exposed, his killer robot, Maximilian, starts taking out the crew of the ship that found him in deep space. This is a dark film.
Maximilian!
Yeah, when Anthony Perkins bites it in that movie, that's serious. I remember watching, because I did watch The Black Hole when I was like 5 or 6. That was terrifying. I'm like, that couldn't have been very nice.
No.
But like you said, no gore, no blood splatter, no nothing.
Oh, why?
We know what happened. He went right through the book,
right,
and carved that guy up like a turkey.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, wow. Consult the Oracle.
Yes.
Consult the Oracle, and speaking of Oracle, we'll be getting to Oracles later on this evening.
Unfortunately, like Dark Crystal, Black Hole is yet another movie that suffers from slow pacing.
Yeah.
There are long pauses in that movie.
And again, like if you're 5 or 6, like I watched it yesterday just to catch up on it, and I enjoyed the science and the whole macabre of it, and it's a 90-minute film, but again, if I was 5 years old, I would be bored to tears. Yeah. You know, like, I'm going to sit here and talk about space and time and continuums and trajectories and R squared plus B squared over sine squared. I'm like, no, I'm 5. I don't want to listen to this, man. I want lasers, right?
Yeah.
Hey, look at that. Vincent, you're going to have the time of your life in there.
I don't mean to sound superior, but I hate the company of robots.
I also remember Roddy McDowall being one of the robots.
Yep.
So try and relax, have some fun. Remember what they say, all work and no play?
All sunshine makes a desert, so the Arabs say. You'll alert me if you're in trouble, Captain.
But the end of the movie is a complete mess. Like, I don't know what they're trying to convey there.
They were trying
at all.
To imply that going through the black hole was like a gateway to heaven and hell. Like, the Palomino's crew basically winds up in heaven because they're the good people. And him and Maximilian wind up in hell is what it looks like it's being implied by. It was a mind trip of an ending. Like it does not match the rest of the movie at all.
No, it's just like did they lose track? Was that always the idea, or did they make the movie going, well, what do we do at the end? Well, how about this? Sure, go ahead. Still macabre.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah,
very macabre.
No
Now the Skeksis gather in the sacred chamber, where the crystal hangs above a shaft of air and fire. Today, once more, they gather at the crystal as the first sun climbs to its peak. For this is the way of the Skeksis. As they ravage the land, so too they learn to draw new life from the sun. Today, once more, they will replenish themselves, cheat death again, through the power of their source, their treasure, their fate, the Dark Crystal.
That was one of the go-to movies if we had, when we were in grade school, if a teacher needed a marking period or needed a period to do lesson planning and they just wanted to basically put us aside for like an hour and a half, that's the movie we would watch. I must have saw that movie about four times in my school between grades one and three. I don't think they actually watched The Dark Crystal, any of the adults or any of the teachers. I'm not sure if they screened it ahead of time, because I'm not sure how many
they
parents
saw Henson.
And they thought, oh, this must be fairly innocent.
In 1982, the Henson team that brought us The Muppet Show released another puppet fantasy called The Dark Crystal. It was an adventure film following this meek little character, Gelfling, as he made his way across the land, seeking to fulfill a prophecy that would destroy the evil Skeksis for good. It wasn't necessarily a failure, but the fact that it opened the same year as Spielberg's E.T., which just dominated the box office that summer, and the concern the parents had that this was a frightening film, gave it a very muted presence.
To save our world, Gelfling, you must find the shark before the three suns meet. If not, Skeksis rule forever.
I watched the Dark Crystal for the first time a couple of days ago, actually, because it was one of those movies. It was a Henson movie that I just kind of missed, because there was like I'd rather either watch Labyrinth or one of the Muppet shows or something like
right.
that. Dark Crystal, I just kind of missed. So I'm like, you know what? For this show, I have to watch this movie. So I watched it with Nude a couple of days ago.
The Gelfling all dead. Gotham, kill them all. You can't be Gelfling. You look like Gelfling. Smell like Gelfling. Maybe you are Gelfling.
I'm looking for Augra.
What do you want of me?
A shard. A crystal shard.
She's scary. I don't care how you slice it. With the sticking her eye in it, rolling around. That is not a nice looking lady.
It sounded like she was speaking Klingon at first.
I know.
She looks She looks like a shriveled old Klingon.
But yeah, that's creepy. If you're just, oh yay, I'm trapped, held up in the air by vines, and oh look, a hand holding an eyeball. This is going to be a great day, I can just tell.
From the people that brought you Kermit the Frog, we now bring you detachable eyeballs, soul-sucking skeletons.
This won't hurt. We just want to drain your living essence. Then you can be the same as the other podlings here. A slave.
The Skeksis are the most horrible, foul, evil, twisted, skeletal vulture things Henson has ever created.
The scene where they would strap the Gelflings, or the creatures, and they would open up, it would look like a furnace door opening. And it was that fracture in the crystal that caused it. But it was like they were draining
their
souls
off.
Out. Yeah. They called it essence, but it was their way of maintaining their youth. That they would drink the essence. It was like, I thought, wow, that's... Drinking blood isn't that scary. Vampires aren't that scary. But to rip out your soul and turn it into like Mountain Dew and drink it, I mean, that's not good. I mean, that... And for kids that have no concept of death to have to try and picture what it's like to have your soul ripped out, I mean, that's a whole level of disturbing that's beyond even just plain, you know, violence.
You're very lucky, slave. Only the Emperor can drink your essence.
Torture!
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Torture!
Next film actually was the other great sleepover movie that I saw probably more times in a sleeping bag than any other movie was Tron, and that was Tron was another one of these movies that was everywhere and also hit theaters at the same time when video game systems were on the rise, which was perfect timing.
It's murder out there. You can't even travel around your own microcircuits without permission from Master Control Program. I mean, sending me down here to play games. Who does he calculate he is?
For years, pinball was the go-to entertainment. The stand-up console was the pinball machine. Video games changed it considerably. And Tron was Disney's way of saying what would happen if people were actually brought into this digital world that is the programs that fuel these games.
I want him in the games until he dies playing.
And even the makers of the film populated the set with a whole bunch of video games, and he encouraged the actors and actresses, when they were on breaks and not doing anything, to go and play games just to get into the digital mindset of being in this world.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it worked or not, but I thought that was an interesting piece of trivia.
The beginning of the movie has a hacker program named Clue being caught trying to enter a restricted area of data.
No! I must have gotten in there by mistake! I was...
Who programmed you?
I was sim...
The stakes are high in this movie, and that's the beginning of the film right there. You know, like, what is going on here?
Also, it goes to show that you don't need blood and guts necessarily to be horrific.
No, you need good performance.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff Bridges on that wall.
You're in trouble, program. Make it easy on yourself. Who's your user?
Forget it, Mr. High and Mighty Master Control! You are making me talk!
Suit yourself.
I don't know what they did or said to him, but they were like, yeah, whatever, something's gonna happen to you, and just imagine that it's the worst pain you've ever felt in your entire life. That's what I need from you. And he sold it.
Yeah.
Imagine that you're about to be torn apart bit by bit.
Hey, what's been going on in the other sectors? You know, I've been stuck here for 200 microcycles.
What I liked about that digital war, too, was that life was incredibly cheap. That the life and death was incredibly more ruthless, as it should be. Deleting a file, uninstalling a program, or simple, easy things that are done like a flip of a switch. And that's how characters in that world were treated. If you were not of any use, there was no hesitating or debating. You were just erased. It was like, give me what I want. No, fine, you're erased.
I'll be lucky if the MCP doesn't blast me into a dead zone. I want those conscripts!
Sark was... so badass. David Warner did a great job. And he did the voice of
the MCP.
The MCP as well.
You're getting brutal, Sark. Brutal and needlessly sadistic.
Thank you, Master Control.
The Master Control program and Sark in Tron were villains that rivaled, to me, and this is saying a lot, Darth Vader in the Star Wars saga. You know, like, just evil, but at the same time, you loved them. You loved to hate these characters. You wanted more Sark. You wanted more Master Control because they were just so damn cool.
I remember end of line. End of line. The coolest phrase.
What do you want with the Pentagon?
The same thing I want with the Kremlin. I'm bored with corporations. Keep those programmers out of the system and get me that Chinese language file I asked for. End of line.
You get the double threat in this. You get the threat of advanced computer science going too far, which is now becoming a thing again. You have Stephen Hawking talking about the threat of AI today, and that if we're not careful, we're going to pass a point where we can't put the genie back in the bottle. But we also get the threat of corporation. The idea that corporations are taking over everything.
Well, yeah, it was the era of greed.
Yeah. But to have a computer be the face of that greed, just gobbling up everything it could, taking over every computer system, back in a time before we had the internet, was kind of a bold idea.
I don't know how you survived, slave. It doesn't matter. Prepare to terminate.
What a showdown. I mean, what an absolutely glorious showdown. And you're right. It's a firewall. He's setting up the firewall to stop the data from getting through.
You're very persistent, Tron!
I'm also better than you.
It's genius.
Yeah.
It's genius. Whoever wrote this script knew how a computer and networks work. This was 1982. How much did you know about computers in 1982? Of course, you were
I was four.
Very interesting story. but dark and macabre with, you know, digital violence, state-of-the-art photography.
But it very much is the story of Gladiator, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Spartacus.
It is. It's just in a slightly different backdrop.
Taking our friend here and some other religious fanatics to master control. When I disembark, this ship and everything that remains on board will automatically de-res. This means you.
The one thing I really liked about Ghostbusters, at the very beginning of the film, setting it in the huge library of New York, and the camera following that librarian through the very dark and almost endless corridors of books with that kind of whistle music behind her, just set the tone for the movie perfectly. And then the cards start flying out, all this poltergeist activity, and it starts getting a little
bit... And then the wind and the light and the... And then the credits.
And you're like, what the hell is she looking at?
Yeah.
It doesn't give it to you. And you're like, what the hell? What did she see?
It's something strange in the neighborhood. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Ghostbusters, I kid you not, is one of two movies that have made me fly out of the theater. And then at the beginning of the movie, you had that, when the thing, the librarian ghost went, rawr! I was like, ugh! Stuck through that. I stuck through the Dana abduction. The one thing that set me off was at the end of the film, when Gozer's sitting there with her two, with the dogs there, and she turns towards the camera, and she had those dark red eyes. For some reason, when she, it was a big close-up of her, and she turned and looked at you with those red eyes, I'm like, that's it? I'm gone. I didn't stay. I remember my friends going, oh, what'd you think about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? I'm like, what Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? And they're like, you didn't see the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? I'm like, no, I got the heck out of there, man. I had enough.
Oh, you're here.
Yeah, what does he got?
This is Big Peter. This is very big. There's definitely something here.
T-Gun? This reminds me of the time you tried to drill a hole through your head. Remember that?
That would have worked if you hadn't stopped me.
Now, okay, these were SNL guys, yeah. Right? These were Saturday Night Live. So would you consider Ghostbusters to be a family-friendly film?
Oddly enough, I think it was more for kids. Because my parents, I don't think, had much interest in seeing it.
Well, when this came out, I was only six, so... Like 5, 6, depending. I can't remember exactly what time of the year it came out at. I think it was a summer movie. So I would have been.
Oh, yeah.
I would have been 5 at that point because my birthday's in the fall. But I didn't see it until it came out on video.
Okay.
Yeah, like my parents didn't take me to see this in the theater.
This was one of those movies where if your parents. Because I think parents at that time were under the impression that it had scary elements, and some parents wouldn't let their kids see it for that reason, that there were horrific moments in the movie, and that got out.
This was the day of the PG-13. This was where they had drawn a line in the sand, because back when Poltergeist and Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, they were afraid to give these movies R ratings because they wanted people to actually buy the tickets. If it was rated R, then the whole family wouldn't go see it. Temple of Doom was the line in the sand. Okay, we need something between PG and the hard R. So then all of a sudden you got PG-13 movies, and it would was usually PG-13 for, what would they call it? Frightening scenes. That's what it
there
was. Ghostbusters had frightening scenes. Gremlins had frightening scenes. So yes, basically it was the studio saying, you can bring your kids to watch this, but there's a good chance that your kid's going to pull a cash wampum and fly out of the theater at some point because it's going to get a little intense in spots.
Egon, your mucus.
This happened to you before? Huh. First time?
In Ghostbusters, it's perfect because it is offered as a comedy, and it still works. It's still one of the funniest movies I've seen.
It is very funny.
It is the one movie for which the word chemistry is an understatement, you know. But it's just the hook. And when you get into it, you think, oh, it's a fun comedy. You're enjoying it. It's hilarious, the interactions between you know, the core Ghostbuster crew there is, it's timeless. I mean, you still laugh at it watching it now, even knowing what the jokes are.
Could you come over here and talk to me for a second, please? Could you just come over here for a second, please? Right over here.
Come here, Francine. Come here. What do we do? I don't know. What do you think? Stop that!
Ghostbusters is one of those movies, highly quotable, like half the movie has dialogue where we just love reciting it because it's fun. But every so often, there was pockets of the movie that were genuine, like the PG-13 would say, frightening scenes.
Right.
When Dana is abducted in her apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Very frightening. Let's watch that now. Right there, when that door closed, everybody in the theater was silent. Like, everybody was like, okay, what have we gotten ourselves into?
What did I just see?
Earlier in the film, where she opens up the fridge and you can see the pyramid from whatever dimension,
right,
and the thing goes zool and the light comes out,
oh,
and she screams and shuts the door. That was terrifying.
Yeah,
I remember that. I was like this in my seat. I was almost out. And then so much so that when he goes to her apartment in a more lighthearted part of the movie and he opens up the refrigerator and he goes, oh my god, I was white knuckled. I'm like, what does he see? Look at all the junk food. I'm like, oh, thank God.
So good.
You actually eat this stuff?
There was, and her voice said Zool.
Well, there's nothing there now, and I'm like, oh, thank God.
Are you using that correctly? I'm pretty sure.
It's technical.
It's one of our little toys.
One of our little toys.
Bangs, you serious about this catching you golf?
I'm always serious.
My friends, we're reaching the conclusion of this show, but not until we touch upon the crown jewel of this lesson in terror. A Disney film like nothing you've ever seen before. If there was ever a horror movie out there that was made specifically for children, then it would have to be Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes.
By the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes.
Then rang the bells, both loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep.
The wrong will fail, the right prevail. With peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Speaking of movies that we saw when we were kids that freaked the hell out of us, Something Wicked Is Mine.
Let's get to that one, man.
Took me 4 or 5 watches to make it all the way through that movie. That movie used to freak me out when I was a kid.
Something Wicked This Way Comes, 1983. Like, this is a Buena Vista Disney Pictures movie. It was Disney. It was a Ray Bradbury story that he had thought of back in the 50s. This was a family movie that dealt with the macabre. It dealt with death. There's blood in it, okay? There's torture. There is some very wicked cruelty in it, and it's a children's story. It's like Tales from the Dark Side for children. I can't think of a better example of a horror movie aimed directly for the entire family as this one right here.
Well, the carnival's come.
Throughout the movie, you get the feeling like something's coming. You don't know why, but it's autumn, and sure enough, this train comes in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night? Hell yes, come on!
The movie focuses on these two boys and their encounter with the Mr. Dark's pandemonium.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the greatest effect in this movie, the one that sells it most for me, has to be Jonathan Pryce's voice.
Introductions all around. My name is Mr. Dark. I advise you to respect it.
I love the British accent. It works so well for a villain. I don't know
why.
They
do. The classic film villains were always British.
You know, like even like the Empire, you know, in the Star Wars movies. They were all British. It just works.
Of Dark's Pandemonium Carnival.
Isn't he the brave one?
And he was absolutely creepy.
I watched this movie a couple nights ago. It is dark.
It is.
Oh, yeah. It is a dark film.
It's like a Twilight Zone episode for kids.
what was that? It was 83,
I believe.
83. Like, I was young when that came out. They're like, oh, it has Disney on it. Sure, let's stick Nick in front of the TV and let him watch it.
It's soon very clear that this is no ordinary carnival. We watch as the wishes and dreams of the townspeople are fulfilled through its dark sideshows. But at what cost?
Number two!
Two! Number two! That's me! That's it! That's
it! I want it! What? So it is, sir. So it is.
I want it last!
No need to agitate yourself.
I want it last. Oh, you don't know how
long
it's
been. 1,000. There's one. Two. Three.
Number two.
Four. Five. Six. Seven. Eight. Nine. Ten. $1,000.
You know what? I watched this. I watched Something Wicked This Way Comes, and you know what it reminds me of very much? Needful Things.
Yeah, I would say so.
Because what was this? Basically, this carnival would come and seduce the town, particularly those people who have wants and desires, would fulfill those desires, but then take something from them.
Yeah.
The old teacher there, who used to be beautiful, she looks at herself in the mirror, they grant her youth and beauty, but what do? They take her eyesight away from her. Sure, she's beautiful,
she
but now she's blind.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and,
it's like a Twilight Zone episode.
And she's cursed to becoming part of the show forever. Holy dark, man.
Yeah. It's the old Faustian bargain, right? You get what you wish for, but at a price.
You will tell me when the storm is coming. When comes the storm?
Oh, Tom Fury says the lightning shall jump the world and make men hop and skip like scalded cats.
You fool. Lightning shall make you hop and make you tell.
Storm do do. Tom Fury has a secret.
When?
So is the lightning and the thunder.
Things take a dramatic turn when Will and Jim catch Mr. Dark torturing a man for information. After this encounter, he will stop at nothing to get his hands on these boys.
Those boys, they've seen too much. Hunt them down and bring them back to me.
Every evil weapon he has in his arsenal is used to flush these kids out of hiding, including, and get this, a magnificent tarantula attack sequence. I love Disney!
A nude!
Spider!
Oh, she watched it with us. Your thoughts on the spider attack nude?
Why would you put me through that again?
You're a spider expert.
No, I just hate them. I mean, and this is supposed to be a family, you know.
It's a Disney movie!
Yeah. Yeah, and I probably watched this, and I probably put it out of my memory, and that's probably why I'm freaked out about spiders. This is horrible. It's horrible.
Spiders!
No.
No?
No more. How can they put that in a children's movie? It's horrible.
The people who gave us Mickey Mouse.
There is a scene towards the end of the film where the boys are hiding out in the town library. The librarian is Will's father, played by an elderly Jason Robards. The exchange between him and Price is unbelievably cool.
I know who you are. You are the Autumn People. Where do you come from? The dust. Where do you go to? The grave.
Yes. We are the hungry ones. Your torments call us like dogs in the night. And we do feed. And feed well.
To stuff yourselves on other people's nightmares.
And butter our plain bread with delicious pain. So, you do understand a little.
Jonathan Pryce is bad in that film, man. I can't think of enough. I've watched a lot of films where something is promised to a human by a supernatural force. Wishmaster comes to mind. But him sitting there tearing the pages out of the book and counting down. He's starting at 30. You know, you tell me where these kids are and I'll make you young again. And you know throughout the film that this man has a lot of regrets, would like nothing better than to go back and change a whole bunch of years, is stoic and just non-moving. He is a rock.
Speak, or you've missed it.
going.
It's gone. 31. 32. 32, year of a man's prime, loved by many women. He might still learn to swim. 32, going, gone. 33, 34, 35. Oh, 35.
But you can see the temptation on his face.
Oh, yeah. Like, even as soon as he's like, I can make it young again, his eyebrows just go, huh? What are you talking about? And he's watching his years fly away with each page that he rips from the book. What a great scene.
Well, Jason Robards, I found, was actually kind of an underutilized and underappreciated actor. He was in a lot of things, but he never really got his due.
Here, your heart. Here, my count. 39. Now. 39. Fine, yeah. Still young. 39. Gone. Oh, 40. 40. And here, your old, old heart.
Dad, no! Don't listen!
I'd love to tell you what happens next, but I'd rather you go out, watch the movie, and find out for yourself.
Dad gave me this. Fifth birthday. He said, childhood's over in the moment you know you're gonna die.
I hold on to my childhood memories, and I drink from them.
So what is the message here then? You know, that there is macabre for the whole family to enjoy?
Oh yeah, well, it's the thing is, the whole point, I think, back then with these movies was not plant your kid in front of the TV and just watch, let him watch it by himself. This is something, you know, you want to be there with your kid. Because eventually you want your children to not be afraid of the dark. Right. But they're not going to learn to stop being afraid of the dark by themselves. You don't teach them to stop being afraid of the dark by just sticking them in a dark room until they stop screaming. Yeah. Didn't work for me.
The other message, too, should be that if a child shows interest in something frightening or terrifying or, you know, of the horrific nature, that it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not the end of the world. They're not disturbed. I mean, I think it's a normal thing that we all want to feel scared sometimes. We do it for fun.
The whole idea is you're supposed to sit there with them so that when they do get afraid, you can help them get through it.
There is fun to be had with the entire family huddled together in front of the boob tube and just giving themselves to a story that could be macabre and terrifying and suspenseful, but in a family kind of way.
There you go. It's Horror 101's Kindergarten of Terror.
You've almost reached your decision gate, and I can't spare you any more time. Goodbye.
And there you have it, our first, and probably last, family-friendly Horror 101 show. This was actually a real trip going down memory lane making this show. Admittedly, we sat for hours talking about a bunch of rated G and PG titles with dark elements, and a lot of them didn't make the show. Special mention goes to Disney's Watcher in the Woods, starring the late, great Betty Davis from 1980. That's a great ghost story. Joe Dante's Gremlins, 1984, which is also a Christmas movie. Fantastic thrill-omedy for the whole family. There's also The Goonies, Neverending Story, and Cloak and Dagger with E.T.'s Henry Thomas. We hope you enjoyed this 39th podcast. Look for episode 40 in the new year. We're not exactly sure what we're going to be cooking up for that one, possibly focusing on a film that turns 40 in 2015. That sounds like a logical direction to take. We've been getting feedback from some of our listeners that they'd like us to focus on some newish kind of films. That's something we'll certainly consider in the future as well. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, cult sensation Nick McPherson, and the lovely Nude, this is Cash Wampum wishing you all a very Merry Christmas and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the poo-poo out of you, and we're going to help you find it right here on Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.
They probably thought I was going to say shit there.
Whoops!
Oh!
I blew it!